Chocolate with an ashy taste is still better than no chocolate at all.
Well, Matt said when we were all warm and cozy, are we ready for some problems?
I would have said no, but what good would that have done? We need to clear the snow off the roof of the sunroom, he said.
Why? John asked.
Just a precaution, Matt said. Snow can be heavy, and we don't know if this is the last of it for the winter. We don't want the roof caving in on us.
I don't want you on the roof, Mom said. It's too dangerous.
It'll be a lot more dangerous if the roof caves in, Matt said. That could kill us.
It will kill us, actually, because if we lose the sunroom, we lose the wood stove. I'll be careful, but it has to get done.
You said problems, John said.
The ladder is in the garage, Matt said. So are the shovels.
Let's see if there's snow in front of the garage, Mom said. She went to the sunroom door and tried to open it. But no matter how hard she pushed, the door stayed shut.
There must be snow against it, Matt said. But we can get out through the front door.
So we did. But instead of being able to look out the sunroom door to see how the garage was, we had to walk over to the driveway to get a look.
Just walking a couple of feet was exhausting.
You had to lift each leg high to get it onto the snow, like exaggerated giant steps. And then the snow was so soft, your leg sank right through it.
It should be pretty easy to shovel, John said.
That's good, Matt said, because we're going to have a lot to do. We made it to the sunroom door. The snow was 4 feet high. No wonder Mom couldn't open it.
Well, that's on our list to shovel, Matt said. Now let's see how the garage is.
The garage was real bad. The snow had drifted higher than the padlock.
We need the shovel, I said. Are you sure it's in the garage?
Matt and John both nodded. Mom took a deep breath, and then she coughed.
We'll have to move the snow away by hand, she said. The garage door's open out, so we don't have a choice. I think pots and pans will make the job go faster, and we'll all work on it.
John, go to the house and put the pots and pans in a garbage bag and bring them back here. We'll do what we can by hand until you get here.
John began the long trudge back to the front door. Once he was out of hearing range, Mom turned to Matt and said, "How bad is it, really?"
"Well, we are certainly isolated," Matt said.
"I saw Dad's old pair of cross-country skis in the garage once.
The shoes that go with them, too. They'll give us some mobility. Bikes will be useless. Forget driving.
I hope you don't mind me saying this, but it's a relief Mrs. Nesbitt is gone."
"I thought the same thing," Mom said. "Do you think the roads will be cleared at any point?"
Matt shook his head. "There aren't enough people left to shovel the roads out, and there isn't enough gas for the snowplows.
Maybe the townspeople will clear the main streets out, but that's going to be it. We're on our own."
"I'm thinking about the hospital," Mom said.
"I've been thinking about that too," Matt said. "We can't get there. Peter can't get to us. And I don't think the snow is going to melt before April or May. And there's the risk of more snow."
"I like Peter," I said. "But it's not the end of the world if we don't see him for a few weeks, or even a few months."
"That's not it," Matt said. "What if one of us needs a doctor or the hospital? What happens then?"
"We'll just be careful," Mom said, "so we won't need a doctor. Now come on, let's see how much of the snow we can remove by hand before Johnny discovers all we've been doing is talking." The snow got inside all our gloves, and our pant legs grew wet too. We were relieved when John returned with the pots and pans. We each took one and used it as a mini shovel. The pans speeded the process, but it still took a long time before the garage doors looked like they could be opened. Then, Mom realized the key to the padlock was in the house, so we had to wait until Matt went back, got the key, and returned. Even when he did, it wasn't that easy to get the garage doors opened. But we cleared some more, and we all pulled together, and much to our relief, the door finally opened. There were two shovels right by the door. There was also a 20-pound bag of rock salt, which claimed it would melt ice in below-zero temperatures.
"If it doesn't," Mom said, "we can always demand a refund."
This struck all of us as so funny, we couldn't stop laughing until the coughing took over.
"Two shovels," Matt said. "One for me, and one for John. Let's get started."
"No," Mom said. I want us all to go to the house first and eat something. And we should take some aspirin.
We'll be fine, Matt said. You don't have to worry.
Worrying is what I do, Mom said. Occupational hazard of motherhood. Now, everybody back to the house for food and aspirin.
What's the aspirin for? I whispered to Matt as we made our way to the front door.
Our hearts, Matt said. I guess Mom thinks we have the hearts of 60-year-olds.
I heard that, Mom said. I just don't want you taking any more chances than you have to. Besides, you'll be aching all over by the time you're finished. You might as well start on the aspirin now.
Mom was certainly right about the aching all over.
Just shoveling the snow out with a pot made my shoulders and upper back hurt. And I loved the idea of lunch, which turned out to be soup and spinach. I guess Popeye did his share of snow shoveling.
Once we'd eaten, Matt and Johnny went to work, first clearing out the sunroom door, then creating walkways from the house to the garage and from the front door to the road. Then they got the ladder and cleared off all the snow from the sunroom roof. It took them a long time, but they seemed to enjoy it.
While they're shoveling, let's do some laundry, Mom said to me.
I'll boil down the snow and you do the washing. Women's work, I muttered. But the truth is, much as I don't care for washing John's underwear, I sure don't want him washing mine.
If I thought my back hurt from the shoveling, it was nothing compared to how I felt after doing all the laundry. On the one hand, it was exciting actually having water to wash clothes with. We had done a little with Mrs. Nesbitt's water, but we haven't since then, and that was about a month ago.
But laundry is hard, hard work. For starters, snow melts down into not very much water, so Mom was constantly having to refill the pot on the wood stove. And of course the water was gray-toned, which makes it harder to believe that the clothes are actually clean. Then, I'd overcompensate with laundry detergent, and it would take forever to rinse it out. The water was really hot from the wood stove, and the kitchen really cold, since it has no heat, and my poor body didn't know what to feel. My hands and face got steamy hot, and my feet and legs stayed ice cold. Then, once each sink load was washed and rinsed, I had to squeeze all the clothes dry, which took even more energy than the washing and rinsing. All this for clothes that are permanently dingy. Mom strung up a clothesline in the sunroom, because if we hang wet clothes in any of the other rooms, they'll freeze. So now, the sunroom has the smell of wet laundry to go along with everything else. At least the clothesline is nowhere near the mattresses. I don't want clothes dripping on my face while I'm sleeping. Matt and Johnny did the roof clearing, and while they were at it, they cleared the snow off the skylights, so whatever light is out there we now get. I'm too tired to be scared. I wonder how I'll feel in the morning. December 5th. Mom told us to get back to our schoolwork.
Snow day, Johnny said.
Mom didn't argue. I almost wish she had. December 7th. We've been cooped up in the sunroom for almost a week now. I thought it was bad before, but this is ridiculous. At least before, Matt and Johnny could go out and chop wood all day long. Now they're stuck inside too. Sometimes, one of us invents an errand to take us away from the others. I'm still in charge of bedpans and chamber pots, so I have to walk about 50 feet from the house for that lovely job. John cleans out Horton's litter, so he has to go outside at least once a day. Besides, he and Matt use the outdoors as a bathroom, poor guys. Matt brings in snow for our water needs. Only Mom never leaves the house. But we'll all suddenly remember something we have to get from our bedrooms or the pantry. And no matter how cold the rest of the house is, it feels like heaven just to get by yourself for a few minutes. Tomorrow is Friday, so Matt went out with the cross-country skis to see if he could make it into town. Much to Mom's great relief, he came back and said he couldn't. He never really liked cross-country skiing, and the snow is very light and powdery, and he doesn't have the skill, and probably not the strength, to manage 4 miles. On the one hand, I'm kind of glad to know there's something Matt refuses to try. On the other hand, much as I love him, it might have been nice not having him around for a few hours. If it's only December, what are we going to be like by February? December 10th. John was making himself a can of green peas for lunch when all of a sudden he turned to us and said, "How come none of you eat lunch?" It's funny. We haven't in ages, But John was always outside with Matt, and I guess he figured Matt ate a big breakfast or something. He didn't know what Mom and I were doing. But now that we're breathing the same air constantly, John finally noticed.
Not hungry, Matt said. When I'm hungry, I eat.
Same here, I said with a big false smile on my face. We all eat when we need to, Mom said. Don't let what we do stop you, Johnny.
No, John said.
If you're all just eating one meal a day, then that's what I should do too. We all said, no!
Johnny looked absolutely horrified and ran out of the room.
I remember a few months ago how angry I was that we weren't eating as much as Johnny, how unfair that seemed. But now, I feel like Mom was right. It is a possibility only one of us is going to make it. We have fuel, and we have water, but who knows how long our food will last. Mom's so thin it's scary, and Matt certainly isn't as strong as he used to be, and I know I'm not. I'm not saying John is, but I can see how he might have the best chance of making it through the winter, or spring, or whatever. Probably, if only one of us really is going to survive, Matt would be the best choice, since he's old enough to take care of himself. But Matt would never let that happen.
I don't want to live 2 weeks longer, or three or four if it means none of us survive.
So I guess if it comes to it, I'll stop eating altogether to make sure John has food. Matt started to go upstairs to talk to John, but Mom said no, she'd do it. Her limp was pretty bad, and I worried about her getting up the stairs, but she insisted on going. This is awful, I said to Matt, just in case he hadn't noticed. It could be worse, he said. We may look back on this as the good time. And he's right. I still remember when Mom sprained her ankle the first time, and we played poker and really enjoyed ourselves. If you told me 3 months before then that I'd have called that a good time, I would have laughed out loud. I eat every single day. 2 months from now, maybe even 1 month from now, I might eat only every other day. We're all alive. We're all healthy. These are the good times.
December 11th. I went outside to do chamber pot duty, and John followed me out with kitty litter brigade. I was turning to go back in when he grabbed hold of my arm.
I need to talk to you, he said. I knew it had to be important. If John talks to anybody, it's Matt.
Okay, I said, even though it was 12 degrees below zero and I really wanted to get back in.
Mom said I should keep eating lunch, he said. She said she needs to know one of us is going to stay strong, in case the rest of us need him.
Yeah, I said. She's told me that, too. And you're the one we need to stay strong.
Is that okay? He asked. Don't you mind?
I shrugged.
I don't know if I can be the strong one, John said. Matt practically had to drag me into Mrs. Nesbitt's.
But you went, I said.
You did what you had to. That's what we've all been doing. We do what we have to. You're a lot more mature than you used to be, John. I have so much respect for you, the way you handled your birthday. And I'll tell you something else. When we went for Matt, I fell, and my oil lamp went out. And all I could think was, John will get me. John's stronger than I am, and it'll be okay. So, to some extent, it's already happening.
But what if you die? He cried. What if you all die?
I wanted to tell him that was never going to happen, that we'd be fine. That the sun was going to be shining tomorrow, and the roads would be plowed and the supermarkets would be open, full of fresh fruits and vegetables and meat.
If we all die, you'll leave, I said, because you'll be strong enough to. And maybe someplace in America or Mexico or somewhere, things are better, and you'll manage to get there. And then Mom's life, and Matt's, and mine won't have been a waste. Or maybe the moon's going to crash into the earth and we'll all die anyway.
I don't know, Johnny. Nobody knows. Just eat your damn lunch and don't feel guilty.
I'm sure the queen of pep talks.
John turned around and went in. I stayed outside a while longer and kicked the snow for lack of a better target.
December 13th.
I think we've been doing this meal thing backward, Matt said this morning. For one gleeful moment, I thought he meant he and Mom and I should be eating two meals a day, and John only one. But of course, that wasn't it. None of us eats breakfast, he said. We're hungry all day. We eat supper and stay up a little while, and then we go to sleep. The only time we're not hungry is when we're sleeping. What good does that do us? So, we should have our big meal at breakfast? Mom asked, which was pretty funny, since our big meal is our only meal. Breakfast or lunch, Matt said. Maybe brunch, like Miranda used to do. I think I'd rather be hungry at night than all day long. What about me? John asked. You'd eat something at supper time, Matt said. I had to admit it made sense, especially if John ate his second meal when we'd already eaten. There have been a couple of days when I've wanted to take his pot of whatever he was eating and pour it over his head. I'd probably feel less jealous if I wasn't as hungry. Let's try it, Mom said. I liked supper because that was the time of day we were together, but now we're together all day long, so that doesn't matter anymore. Let's try eating at 11 and see if we like it. So we did. And now it's 4 in the afternoon, or so Matt tells me, and I don't feel particularly hungry. And doing the laundry is easier too since I'm not hungry. Life just improved. December 16th. Are you still keeping your journal? John asked. Yeah, I said. I just don't have an actual journal anymore. I use notebooks, but that's what I'm writing. Why? I don't know, he said. I just wondered why. I mean, who are you writing things for? Well, not for you, I said, remembering how Mrs. Nesbit had burned all her letters before she died. So don't get any ideas. John shook his head. I don't want to read about any of this stuff, he said. Do you reread it? No, I said. I just write it and forget about it. Okay, he said. Well, don't worry that I'll read it. I got enough problems. We all do, I said. It's funny how sorry I feel for John these days. I'm 2.5 years older than him, and I feel like I got those extra 2.5 years to go to school and swim and have friends, and he got cheated out of them. And maybe he'll live 2.5 years longer than me, or 20 years, or 50, but he'll still never have those 2.5 years of normal life. Every day when I go to sleep, I think what a jerk I was to have felt sorry for myself the day before. My Wednesdays are worse than my Tuesdays way worse than my Tuesday of a week before, which means every tomorrow is going to be worse than every today. Why feel sorry for myself today when tomorrow's bound to be worse? It's a hell of a philosophy, but it's all I've got. December 19th. Lisa's baby was due about now. I've decided she had it, and it was a girl. I've named her Rachel. Somehow that makes me feel better. Of course, I have no idea if she's had the baby, and if she has, whether it's a boy or a girl, or, if it's a girl, what her name is. Technically speaking, I don't know if Lisa is still alive, or if Dad is, but I really prefer to think they are. I've decided they made it to Colorado, and Dad got Grandma out of Las Vegas, and they're all living together. Lisa and Lisa's folks and Dad and Grandma and baby Rachel. When the weather improves, somehow he'll come back for us, and we'll all move to Colorado, and I'll get to be baby Rachel's godmother, just like I was supposed to be. Sometimes Colorado becomes like Springfield used to be for me, this fabulous place with food and clean clothes and water and air. I even imagine that I'll run into Dan there. After I've cleaned up, naturally, and eaten enough so that I don't look like a walking corpse. Also, my hair has grown out. I look great, and I bump into him, and we get married. Sometimes I speed things up, and Rachel's our flower girl. I bet Mom and Matt and John all have fantasies of their own, but I don't want to know what they are. They're not in mine after all, so I'm probably not in theirs. We spend enough time together. We don't need to hang out in each other's fantasies. I hope Dad and Lisa are okay. I wonder if I'll ever meet Rachel. December 21st. Mom put her foot down, her good one, and we're back to doing schoolwork. At least it gives us something to do besides laundry and playing poker. Right now, I'm reading about the American Revolution. The soldiers had a tough time of it at Valley Forge. My heart bleeds for them. Winter. Chapter 18. December 24th. Christmas Eve. And the most wonderful thing happened. The day was just like any other. We'll have a big meal tomorrow. And of course, though Mom and Matt and Johnny don't know it, they're all getting presents. I am so excited at the thought of giving them things. No laundry, though. We draped the clothesline with tinsel and hung ornaments on it. Matt called it a horizontal Christmas tree. Okay, that means today wasn't just like any other. We sat around this evening and started talking about Christmas's past. At first, you could see Mom didn't know if that was a good idea. But she didn't stop us, and we all had stories to tell, and we were laughing and feeling great. And then in the distance, we could hear singing, actual caroling. We put on our coats and gloves and boots and went outside. Sure enough, there were a handful of people singing carols down the road. We immediately joined them. Thanks to the path Matt and John had shoveled, we didn't have too much trouble getting to road level. There were some icy patches, and I wasn't crazy about Mom coming along, but there was no stopping her. The road itself is still covered with 3 feet of snow. Nobody's been traveling on it, so we created our own paths. It was thrilling to be outside, to be singing, to be with people again. I recognized the Mortensons from about half a mile down, the other people I didn't know at all. But our road is funny. Even in good times, we didn't socialize with most of our neighbors. Mom says when she was growing up she did, but so many of the old families have moved out, and new people have moved in, and neighborliness has changed. Now, being a good neighbor means minding your own business. As we trudged and sang, loud and off-key, another family joined us. We ended up with 20 people acting the way people used to, or at least the way they used to in the movies. I don't think we've ever had carolers before. Finally, it got too cold, even for the most dedicated among us. We finished with Silent Night. Mom cried, and she wasn't alone. We hugged each other and said we should see more of each other, but I doubt that we will. We don't want anyone else to know how much food we have or firewood, and they don't want us to know either. Still, it was a wonderful Christmas Eve, and tomorrow is going to be even better. December 25th. Absolutely the best Christmas ever. We woke up in great moods, and we talked all morning about how much fun it had been to go caroling the night before. We don't even like the Mortensons, but seeing them last night, knowing they were still around and healthy, was so incredibly reassuring. "We made a joyful noise," Mom said. "It's good to remember what joy feels like." And lunch. What a feast! First, we had beef broth with oyster crackers. Our main course was linguine with red clam sauce and string beans on the side. Mom even pulled out the bottle of wine Peter had brought ages ago, so we had wine with our dinner. For dessert, Mom served the lime jello I'd gotten at the free food handout last summer. I don't know when she made it, but somehow she'd slipped it past us, and it was an incredible surprise. So much food, so much laughing. It was great. Then we all kind of hemmed and hawed and harumphed and excused ourselves. I went up to my bedroom to get everybody's presents, and much to my surprise, Mom and Matt and John also went upstairs to their rooms. When we met back in the sunroom, we were all carrying presents. Only Mom's were wrapped with real gift wrap. I'd used magazine pages for my presents, and Matt and John used grocery bag brown paper. But we were all surprised. So many presents! It turned out there were 2 presents for each of us, and 1 for Horton. Horton opened his first. It was a brand new catnip mouse. I got it at the pet supply store, John said. I didn't tell anybody because I figured I was just supposed to be buying food and litter. And then I figured at least Horton should get a present for Christmas, so I held on to it. It was actually a present for all of us. Horton immediately fell in love with the mouse and licked it and jumped on it and acted like a kitten. I thought about how scared I'd been when he'd run away, but he knew what family was too, and he came back and we were all together, the way we were meant to be. Mom told us to open our presents from her next.
They're nothing special, she said. Peter got them for me from the hospital gift shop before it closed.
That makes them more special, I said, and I meant it. I wish Peter could be here with us.
Mom nodded.
Well, open them already, she said. Just don't count on there being anything fancy. My fingers trembled when I carefully removed the gift wrap. It was a brand new diary. A really pretty one, with a pink cover and a tiny little lock and key. Oh, Mom, I said. I've never seen anything so beautiful.
John's present was a handheld battery-run baseball game. Don't worry, Mom said. Batteries are included.
John's grin was so bright, he could have lit up the whole room. This is great, Mom, he said. Something for me to do.
Matt's present was a shaving kit. I figured you were due some new razor blades, Mom said.
Thanks, Mom, Matt said. I've been feeling a little scraggly.
I insisted Mom open my present next. She unwrapped it, and when she saw it was a box of actual chocolates, her jaw dropped.
They're probably a little stale, I said.
Who cares? Mom cried.
They're chocolates. Oh, Miranda, of course we'll share. I can't eat the whole box by myself.
She stopped and covered her mouth with her hand.
Oh, I didn't mean that the way it came out.
I burst out laughing. John kept asking what the joke was, but that only made me and Mom laugh louder. So I told Johnny to open his present for me next. He ripped into the paper and then flung the top off the shoebox.
I don't believe this, he shouted. Matt, look at these cards. Look at them. There are hundreds. And they're old. They're from the 50s and 60s. Look, Mickey Mantle and Yogi and Willie Mays. I've never seen a collection like this before.
I'm glad you like them, I said. Relieved he didn't ask where they came from.
Matt, you go next.
Matt opened my present to him.
What? He said at first.
I mean, this is really nice, Miranda, but I don't think I understand.
Oh, I said. I know the pictures are all colored, but the pencils were in great shape, and I thought you could draw on the back of the pictures. You used to draw really well, and I thought maybe you'd like to do it again.
His face lit up.
That's a great idea, he said. You keep your journal, and I'll draw pictures of all of us.
Thanks, Miranda. I'm going to love these pencils. If I'd known he was going to draw us, I'd have looked for gray pencils.
But he seemed excited, and that made me happy.
Open our present next, Johnny said, so I cheerfully did.
It was a watch.
How did you know I needed one? I asked.
You keep asking what the time is, Matt said. It wasn't too hard to guess.
I almost asked where the watch came from, but then I really looked at it and saw it had been Mrs. Nesbitt's. It was an old-fashioned watch, the kind you have to wind every day. Her husband had given it to her, and I knew how much she cherished it.
Thank you, I said. It's a beautiful gift.
I love it.
And now I'll stop pestering you.
I guess this present is the last one, Mom said. But honestly, this whole day has been such a gift. I don't need any more presents.
Open it, Matt said, and we all laughed.
All right, Mom said.
She took off the grocery bag paper and fell silent.
Oh, Matt, she said. Johnny, wherever did you find this?
What is it? I asked. Mom showed me what she was holding. It was an old black-and-white photograph of a young couple holding a baby. It was even in a frame.
Are those your parents? I asked.
Mom nodded, and I could tell it was all she could do to keep from crying.
And that's Mom in the picture, John said. She's the baby.
Oh, Mom, let me see, I said, and she handed it over to me.
It's beautiful.
Where did you find it? Mom asked.
In a box at Mrs. Nesbitt's, Matt said.
I saw it was old photographs, and I brought it back here. She labeled all the pictures on the back. It was John's idea to go back and find a picture frame it would fit in. I didn't remember ever seeing the picture before, so I thought maybe you didn't have it.
I didn't, Mom said, taking it back from me. It's summertime, and we're on the back porch. How funny! We're in the exact same place, only now it's been enclosed. I must be about 6 months old. I guess we were visiting my grandparents. Mr. Nesbitt probably took the picture. I think I can make out his shadow.
Do you like it? John asked. It isn't like it cost anything.
I love it, Mom said. I have so few memories of my parents, and so little to remember them by. This picture, well, it takes me back to a different time. I will cherish it always. Thank you.
I think I'll start sketching, Matt said. I'll do some preliminary sketches before using my pencils. He grabbed some of the paper bag, pulled out the black pencil, and began drawing.
Then, Mom did something that made me even happier. She opened up her box of chocolate and read the diagram very carefully. Then, she took the top off the box and placed 12 of the chocolates in it and passed it over to us.
You can all share this, she said. The rest is mine.
I loved that I was going to get to eat some chocolate, but that Mom respected the fact it was my gift to her and not to all of us. The Christmas after Mom and Dad split up, they both went crazy buying us presents. Matt, Johnny, and I were showered with gifts at home and at Dad's apartment. I thought that was great. I was all in favor of my love being paid for with presents. This year, all I got was a diary and a secondhand watch. Okay, I know this is corny, but this really is what Christmas is all about.
December 27th. No Christmas vacation for us. I'm back at history, John at algebra, Matt at philosophy, and Mom at French. We share what we learn, so I'm getting a refresher course in algebra and keeping up with my extremely minimal French skills. And we get into some really heated discussions about philosophy and history. Also, Mom decided that while Texas Hold'em has its good points, it isn't enough. She dragged out our Scrabble and chess sets, and now we play them too. We play Scrabble together. So far, Mom's on a winning streak. And anytime two of us are in the mood, we play chess. Mom got it in her head that even though none of us can sing, we should do a Sound of Music thing and sing together. If Julie Andrews ever heard us, she'd probably jump into the first available volcano. But we don't care. We bellow show tunes and Beatles songs and Christmas carols at the top of our lungs and call it harmony. Mom's threatening to make us darling little matching outfits out of the drapes. Winning all those Scrabble games is definitely going to her head. December 31st. Tomorrow I'm going to start using my new diary. It has a 3-year calendar in it, so I'll know what the date is. For some reason, that makes me very happy. Matt has been sketching every chance he gets. He even goes outside and sketches our desolate winter landscape. When he was outside this afternoon, I decided the time had come to decorate the sunroom. John and I put nails in the plywood windows and hung up the paintings that Mrs. Nesbitt had left to him and Matt. Then I asked Mom where Matt's sketch of me skating was. It took her a while even to remember it, and then a while longer to figure out where it must be, back of the shelf in her closet. I put on my coat and gloves and went upstairs and found it. I also took a photograph of us kids, one of those Sears studio things that Mom had hanging in her bedroom, and brought it down as well. The sunroom always used to be my favorite room in the house, even more than my bedroom. But lately with the plywood and 4 mattresses on the floor, and a clothesline that almost always has wet clothes hanging from it, and the smell of cooked canned food, and most of the furniture pushed out into the kitchen, and everything else in the room shoved to one side or another, well, it's not going to win any decorating awards. When Matt came in and saw we'd hung all the pictures up, he burst out laughing. Then he saw the picture he'd drawn and looked it over carefully. That's really bad, he said. It is not, Mom and I both said, and cracked up. We outvoted him, so it's staying up. Now, I look at it, and I don't see some idealized version of me. I see a skater, any skater, at a moment of perfect beauty. I see the past the way I like to think it was. I wonder if they're dropping the ball at Times Square tonight, John said. It's already New Year's in a lot of places on Earth. I wondered, and
I think we all did, if this would be our last New Year's. Do people ever realize how precious life is? I know I never did before. There was always time. There was always a future. Maybe because I don't know anymore if there is a future, I'm grateful for the good things that have happened to me this year. I never knew I could love as deeply as I do. I never knew I could be so willing to sacrifice things for other people. I never knew how wonderful a taste of pineapple juice could be, or the warmth of a wood stove, or the sound of Horton purring, or the feel of clean clothes against freshly scrubbed skin. It wouldn't be New Year's without a resolution. I've resolved to take a moment every day for the rest of my life to appreciate what I have. Happy New Year, world! January 1st. Matt informed us that he had made a New Year's resolution. You know something? Mom said. This is the first year I didn't. I'm always resolving to lose weight and spend more time with you kids. And this year, I actually lived up to those resolutions. I am now officially retired. That's fine, Mom, Matt said. But I've resolved to master cross-country skiing. John and Miranda should learn with me. We can take turns with the skis. It'll get us outside and give us some exercise. How about it? Standing around in below-zero weather with the wind howling and falling into snowbanks didn't sound like all that much fun. But Matt gave me one of those looks, and I realized this wasn't about fun and games. It was about being able to escape from here if one of us needed to. Great idea, I said. And while we're talking great ideas, I have one of my own. Yes, Matt drawled, skepticism practically oozing out of him. I think I should do Mom's and my laundry, and you and John should do your own, I said. No, Johnny yelped. I guess he has some idea of what hard work doing the laundry is. Mom, he whined. It makes sense to me, Mom said. Then Miranda should do the dishes, John said. Okay, I said, if we take turns with the dishes. I'm not going to do them all the time. Fair's fair, Matt said. We rotate the dishes, and John and I do our own laundry, at least until we can start chopping wood again. Now let's go skiing. I put on 4 extra pairs of socks so Dad's boots would stay on my feet, and out we went. We ski about as well as we sing, and I spent entirely too much time in snowdrifts on the road. But it got John out of his whiny mood, and by the time we finished, we could all manage a little. We'll do some more tomorrow, Matt said. It's good for us, and it's good for Mom to have some quiet time. Do you think I could ski to the pond? I asked. I'd love to do some more skating. I don't see why not, Matt said. It felt great to expand my world again. The idea of not being stuck in the sunroom cheered me up almost as much as seeing the sun would have. New year, new hopes. That's the way it should be. January 3rd. We're definitely getting better with the skiing. Since it's one pair for the three of us, we don't travel great distances. Mostly we ski back and forth, but each time we increase our distance, if only by a few feet. I can't wait until I'm good enough at it to go back to the pond. I know Matt has us working at it in case there's an emergency and we need to get help, but I've set my goal as getting to the pond for some skating. Even John's gotten into it. Matt pointed out to him that cross-country skiing is good aerobic exercise, and he should think of it as wind sprints, which he'll need to do when the baseball season starts. In a funny way, the same thing is true for Matt. He was a miler back in college, and the skiing is helping him stay in shape. I'm not sure the air quality is so great for us, but at least our hearts are getting a workout. We ski after lunch. It would be too hard in the morning on empty stomachs. There's a part of me that wonders if it's a good idea for us to be burning off calories, but I guess if I starve to death, at least I'll have good muscle tone. And it gets us out of the sunroom. January 5th. Something very weird happened this afternoon. We'd done our skiing and were sitting around the sunroom doing schoolwork when we heard someone knocking at the front door. Smoke comes out of our chimney all the time, so there's obviously people living here. But no one ever comes by. Maybe it's Peter, Mom said. Matt helped her up off her mattress. We all went to the front door to see who it was. John recognized him first.
It's Mr. Mortensen, he said. I need help, Mr. Mortensen said. He looked so desperate it was frightening. My wife, she's sick. I don't know what it is. Do you have anything? Any medicine? Please, anything. No, we don't, Mom said. Mr. Mortensen grabbed her hand. Please, he said. I'm begging you. I'm not asking for food or wood, just medicine. You must have something. Please, she's burning with fever. I don't know what to do. Johnny, get the aspirin, Mom said. That's all we have. I'm sorry. We'll give you some aspirin. That should lower her fever. Thank you, he said. How long has she been sick? Mom asked. Just since this morning, he said. Last night she was fine, but she's delirious. I don't like leaving her alone, but I don't know what else to do. John came back and handed over some aspirin to Mr. Mortensen. I thought he was going to cry, and I felt relieved when he left. We went back into the sunroom. Mom, John said, is Mrs. Mortensen going to be all right? I hope so, Mom said. Remember, Peter told us there'd be illness, but she could just have a cold. None of us is at full strength. It could be one of those 24-hour things. Maybe he just wanted some aspirin for a headache, Matt said. Mrs. Mortensen could be out right now building a snow fort, and he just used her as an excuse. Mom smiled. That's probably wishful thinking, she said. But I'm sure she'll be all right. Now, it seems to me we're all behind on our schoolwork. Miranda, tell me what you've been learning in history. So I did. And as the day went along, I thought less and less about Mrs. Mortensen. But now she's all I can think about. January 6th. I know this is silly, but when we woke up this morning, I was relieved that we were still alive and well. When Matt suggested we do our daily skiing, I leaped up. I skied farther than I have before. I made it practically to the Mortensen house, but when I realized where I was, I turned around and set a record for how fast I made it back to Matt and John. When we got home, I was relieved to see Mom perfectly okay. Matt and John and I didn't say anything about it, but we'd all worked harder on our skiing than we had before. And Mom didn't say anything about how we'd stayed out too long. January 7th. It snowed last night. Our skylights are covered again, and the sunroom is back to total darkness. Matt says it wasn't snowing when he and John went out last night for their bathroom break. I guess it must have started right after that, because by this morning, there were already 4 or 5 inches of fresh, well, gray fresh, snow on the ground. It was still snowing after lunch, and Mom said we should stay in. Instead of skiing, we did our going to the front door and looking to see what it looks like outside routine. The snow stopped sometime this evening, so it was nothing like the blizzard last month. Matt figures we got 8 to 10 inches, not enough to bother cleaning the roof. The heat from the wood stove will melt the snow off the skylights, he said. We should expect snow in January. Fresh snow means more water, and that'll come in handy later on. All of which sounds perfectly fine, but the more snow on the ground, the harder it is to get out of here. I'm not that good at cross-country skiing, especially since Dad's boots are way too big for my feet. There's nothing I can do about it, so there's no point complaining. But I miss the extra light in the sunroom. January 8th. Skiing was a lot harder on the extra 8 inches of snow. We all fell over and over. Of course, Johnny and Matt were extra tired from having to shovel the walkways and a path to the road. I did their laundry for them. January 9th. We are all on edge. I guess it's the snow. There were flurries again today, maybe an inch more. I know it didn't snow for almost a month, and Matt's right. It snows in January. But if it snows 8 inches every couple of weeks in January and February, and it doesn't melt for months, then how much snow are we going to end up with? We still have tons of firewood, but what if they can't cut anymore? What if our food supply runs out? I know I'm doing this to myself. We've made it through so far. There's no reason to think we won't survive some more snow.
but I have that scared feeling in the pit of my stomach. It's dumb. I know it's dumb, but I wish Peter would walk through the door, or Dad and Lisa and baby Rachel. I wish Dan was here. I wish I had a postcard from Sammy making fun of me for being stuck in boring Pennsylvania. I wish the snow was off the skylights. I wish it was still Christmas. Chapter 19. January 10th. They're sick. It started with Mom. She tried to get off her mattress this morning and couldn't. "Something's the matter," she said. "Don't let anyone come near me." Matt and I went over to the side of the room and whispered so Mom wouldn't hear us. "We can't move her out," he said. "She'd freeze in the kitchen. We'll just have to take our chances." But then, Johnny screamed. It was the most horrifying sound I've ever heard. We ran over to him and saw he was delirious, crazed with fever. "Aspirin," I said, and I ran to the pantry to get the bottle. Matt put a pot of water on the stove to make tea. Mom was close to unconscious when the tea was ready, but we lifted her head up and forced the tea and aspirin down her throat. I was afraid she would choke on it, but after we saw her swallow, we put her head back down. She was shivering terribly, so I took one of the blankets off my mattress and draped it around her. John was harder. His arms were swinging around so wildly that he hit me in the jaw and knocked me over. Matt got behind him and held his arms down while I pushed the aspirin into his mouth and poured the tea down his throat. Then I ran to the bathroom and got the rubbing alcohol. Matt turned him over and pinned him down while I gave him a back rub. He was burning with fever and kept tossing off his blankets. "We need help," I said. "I don't know if I'm doing this right." Matt nodded. "I'll go," he said. "You stay here and look after them." But as he got up, he began to sway. For one awful moment, I thought he was going to grab onto the wood stove to keep from falling, but he came to his senses and sank onto John's mattress instead. "I can do it," he said, and he crawled from John's mattress to his own. "Don't worry." I didn't know if he meant he could make it to his own mattress or to get help, but it was obvious he wasn't going anywhere. I handed him a couple of aspirin and poured another mug of tea. "I need you to stay here," I said when he gestured that he could get up. "Mom and John are helpless. You have to make sure the fire doesn't go out and John stays covered. Can you do that? I don't know how long I'll be gone." "I'll be okay," he said. "Go. Peter will know what to do." I kissed his forehead. He was hot, but nowhere near as bad as Mom or John. I put a couple of pieces of wood in the stove and put on my coat, boots, scarf, and gloves. The skis were in the front hallway, so I got them, then closed the front door behind me. The weather wasn't bad, but I'd forgotten to put on the extra socks I need for Dad's boots to fit, and I fell a dozen times as I made my way to the hospital. I fell into snow on top of snow, so I never bruised myself, but of course I got soaking wet. It didn't matter. Each time I fell, I got back up and started again. No one else was going to rescue us. It was all up to me. I don't know how long it took me to reach the hospital. I remember thinking I should have eaten something before I'd left, so it was probably close to noon when I got there. But it didn't matter. Nothing mattered except getting help. Unlike the last time I'd gone there, the outside of the hospital was completely deserted. No guards to prevent me from entering. I had a moment of pure terror that I'd find no one inside, but I pushed the front door open and could hear sounds in the distance. The lobby was empty, so I followed the voices. I'd never heard a hospital so quiet before. There weren't any lights on, and I wondered if their generator had finally stopped working. If the hospital wasn't functional, what chance did any of us have? Eventually, I found the source of the noise. It was two women, nurses I assumed, sitting in an empty room. I charged in there, relieved to see them, terrified of what they were going to say. "I need Dr. Elliot," I said. "Peter Elliot. Where is he?" "Elliot," one of the women said, and she scratched the back of her neck. "He died on Saturday, didn't he, Maggie?"
"No, I think it was Friday," Maggie replied. "Remember, Friday we lost 10 people and we thought that was the worst of it?
Then Saturday we lost 17. But I think he was on Friday.
I'm pretty sure it was Saturday, the first woman said.
Doesn't matter, does it? He's dead. Just about everyone is.
It took me a moment to realize they were saying Peter was dead. Peter, who had done all he could to protect us and care for us, had died. Peter Elliot, I said. Dr. Elliot. That Peter Elliot.
Dead, just like everyone else,
Maggie said, and she kind of laughed.
I guess we'll be next.
Nah, the first woman said.
If we're not dead yet, nothing's going to kill us.
Flu, Maggie said. Past couple of weeks, it's flying through town. People kept coming here like we could do something, and all the staff came down with it, except for Linda here and me and a couple of others. We'd go home, except we're scared of what we'd find, and besides, we'd just make our family sick. Funny, isn't it? We've survived so much, and it's the flu that's going to kill us all off.
My family has it, I said. Don't you have any kind of medicine? There must be something.
Linda shook her head. It's the flu, hun, she said. It just runs its course. Only thing is, no one has any strength left to fight it off. It's a bad strain, Maggie said. Like in 1918, the kind that would kill you anyway.
But my family, I said. What should I do for them?
Make them comfortable, Maggie said. And don't bring them here when they die. We're not taking any more bodies.
I gave them aspirin, I said, and an alcohol rub. Was that the right thing to do?
Honey, listen to us, Maggie said. It doesn't matter.
Maybe you'll be lucky. Maybe your family's stronger. Aspirin won't hurt. Alcohol rubs won't hurt.
Pray if it'll make you feel better. But whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And it'll happen fast.
You can try fluids, Linda said. If you have any food, try to make them eat. They'll need all the strength they can get.
Maggie shook her head. Save the food for yourself, hun, she said. You look healthy enough. Maybe you're like us and you're resistant to this strain. Your folks would want you to live. Take care of yourself. Your family's going to live or die no matter what you do.
No, I said. No, I don't believe you. There has to be something.
There were how many people here last week? Maggie asked. 100, maybe more. We lost half of them the first day. Go home and be with your folks. Give them whatever comfort you can.
Sorry, Linda said. I know it's a tough break.
Sorry to tell you about Dr. Elliot.
He was a nice man.
He worked until the end, then he just collapsed and died. We've lost a lot of staff that way, working until their last breath.
But maybe your family will make it through.
Some people do.
There was no point staying. I thanked them and started the journey home. The wind had picked up and was blowing against me for much of the walk. I stumbled as much as I skied, and it was all I could do to keep from bursting into tears. Peter was dead. For all I knew, Mom and John were also. Matt might die too. I remembered how John had asked me what he would do if he were the only one of us to survive, and how flippant I'd been. And now I was facing the same thing. Yesterday, everything was fine. By tonight, I could be completely alone. I told myself over and over again that I wouldn't let that happen. We were strong. We ate. We had heat and shelter. We'd been lucky so far. We'd stay lucky. We'd stay alive. The sky was darkening when I finally made it home. But it looked like a snow sky, and I was sure it was still daytime. It took all the courage I had to open the door. But when I got to the sunroom, I saw things were pretty much as I'd left them. Mom was so quiet I had to kneel by her side to make sure she was still breathing. But she was. Johnny was delirious, but he was covered and not flailing around so much. Matt was lying on his mattress, but his eyes were open, and he turned around when he saw I'd come in. Peter, he said. I shook my head. We're on our own, I said. It's just the flu. We'll be fine. Okay, he said, and closed his eyes. For the most horrible moment of my life, I thought he'd died. that he had stayed alive until I got back, and then felt he could die. But he'd just fallen asleep. His breathing was shallow, but he was definitely alive. I put some wood in the stove and collapsed onto my mattress. That's where I am now. I don't even know why I'm writing this down, except that I feel fine, and maybe tomorrow I'll be dead. And if that happens, and someone should find my journal, I want them to know what happened. We are a family. We love each other. We've been scared together and brave together. If this is how it ends, so be it. Only please, don't let me be the last one to die. January 11th. We've made it through the night. Mom and Johnny don't seem any better. It was harder getting the aspirin down Mom's throat. She coughed a lot and threw the pills back up, so I dissolved them in tea. Johnny alternates between delirium and stupor. I don't know which is scarier. Matt is the least sick of the three, and I really think he'll survive. He sleeps most of the day, but when he's awake, he's Matt. I gave all of them aspirin and cold remedies every 4 hours and sponge bathed them and gave them alcohol rubs. It's hard keeping the blankets on Johnny. I heated beef broth and spoon-fed all of them. I had to hold up Mom's and Johnny's heads when I did. Matt was able to stay awake long enough to take a few swallows on his own. That's got to be a good sign. When I went out this morning to clean the bedpan, I discovered it was snowing again. It probably started right after I got in yesterday. It was obviously dying down by this morning, but we probably got another 6 inches. Not that it matters. I don't have a fever. I'm tired from staying up, and it's hard to remember to eat, but I'm definitely not sick. Maybe I'm crazy, but I keep thinking if Mom and Johnny and Matt have made it this long, they're not going to die. Linda and Maggie made it sound like everyone at the hospital died the day they got sick. Mom's moaning. I think I'd better check on her. January 12th. No change. Matt's a little weaker. John's a little quieter. It's getting harder for Mom to swallow. There was an ice storm last night. The tree branches are all covered in gray-tinged ice. January 13th. Horton woke me up. He was yowling. I didn't even realize I was asleep. I remember putting logs in the wood stove and lying down for a few minutes, and I must have fallen asleep. Horton was yowling, and I was coughing. Gut-wrenching coughing. Then, I realized the room was filled with smoke, and we were all coughing. I thought, the house can't be on fire, because that would just be too funny. I managed to turn my flashlight on, like I needed it to see if the house was on fire, but I didn't see any flames. I moved the flashlight around and saw the smoke was pouring out of the wood stove. It had backfired and was filling the room with smoke. Smoke inhalation can kill you. My first thought was to get the hell out of there, run outside, and breathe some real air. But everyone else was coughing, which meant they were all still alive, and I had to get them out of there. Mom and Johnny were far too weak to get up on their own. I didn't dare take them outside. The kitchen floor was going to have to do. I took my blankets and grabbed one off of Matt's bed, waking him up in the process. I was half blind from the smoke, but I managed to get the blankets onto the kitchen floor. It took every ounce of courage I had to go back into the sunroom, but I did. Thank goodness Matt had enough strength left to help me pull Johnny first, and then Mom into the kitchen. I told Matt to stay there, and I ran back in and got everyone's pillows and blankets. Matt helped get them in place. He was gasping so badly, I was afraid he'd have a heart attack, but he waved me off. Next, I went to the thermostat to turn on the furnace, but I didn't hear anything go on. I remembered that Dad and Matt had jerry-rigged a battery cell to the furnace, and I would have to go to the cellar to turn it on. I went back to the kitchen where Mom, Matt, and Johnny were all still racked with coughing, and I opened the cellar door. At least the air was clear down there, but the temperature was probably close to zero, and I regretted not having put my shoes on. I held on to the flashlight, and with it, I raced to the furnace, took a moment to figure out what to do, and pulled the right switch. The furnace turned on almost immediately. We still had oil. I went back upstairs as fast as I could and put the thermostat at 65 degrees. Horton had followed everyone into the kitchen, so I didn't have to worry about him. I went to the bathroom and found the cough medicine with codeine that we'd taken.